the societies of a number of Asian and Pacific countries with the United States to further alienate them from China, and to put the United States essentially at the head of this trading group. At the same time, you have a similar negotiation process going on with the European Union. So on the one hand, it just moves us globally to greater rule by the multinational corporations. But the idea is also to put the United States at the head of these trade zones, free trade areas, again, to isolate and to marginalize China. China won't like that. And you know, the reality is that the foundation of peace is justice, and that applies to economic justice as well.
Just to make sure that I heard you right, you said that if this Trans-Pacific Partnership does go forward, that corporate interests would somehow supersede domestic law. How would that happen?
Not unlike the way it does with the World Trade Organization. You have an international treaty. You'll have a basically their right to appeal for, just take in theory, because I haven't seen the particulars of the. Of the agreement, you know, very few have. But let's say, for example, it says that the environmental provisions say there can be a certain level of pollutants in the air, more so than, say, is the policy in the state of Oregon or in Portland. If Portland then passed an ordinance that said, well, you know, it's got to stay at this level and you can't build a company here, you can't put in a new factory, the corporation, whether it's a U.S. corporation or a Vietnamese corporation, could then go to a form of an international tribunal set up under the agreement and appeal it and likely overrule it, because the terms and conditions of the treaty, which becomes international U.S. law, supersedes that of the city council in Portland, or the state of Oregon, or even the U.S. Senate.
Wow, pretty incredible possibility there. And I know that our senators, Ron Wyden, has been unclear as to whether he would oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and Jeff Merkley as well, who are both Democrats, but they are not clear as to whether they are actually opposing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as they, I guess, have interests in both camps.
People may want to demand of them that they get copies of the drafts and that they make them available to the people in Oregon, so we can have a democratic process as to whether or not this moves forward or not, and if so, on what terms. If one has a commitment to democracy, one has to make the demands and exercise it.
Thank you so much. We've been hearing from Joseph Gerson now about the other side of what's happening in Southeast Asia during President Obama's trip to Japan and Korea and the Philippines this week. Joseph Gerson is part of the American Friends Service Committee and was recently part of a conference called Pivoting for Peace in Asia Pacific, Confronting U.S. Militarism and Corporate Dominance. And that group put out a statement opposing the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the increase in U.S. militarism in East Asia. That statement can be found on the website masspeaceaction.org if you look for Pivot for Peace, Not for War. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
KBOO Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present the May film in the monthly Sex Workers film series, Mr. Angel, on Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. Shot over 6 years, Mr. Angel is a documentary that chronicles the life of Buck Angel, a transgender advocate, educator, and porn pioneer. Again, that's Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street. More information about this film and the Sex Workers film series can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. 10 days ago, in my report to the nation on Vietnam, I announced the decision.
I'm Jimmy Tardy. Join myself, S. Brian Wilson, and Mike Hasty as we speak with Joe Lewis, survivor of the Kent State shootings. That's on the anniversary of Nixon's announcement of the expansion of the Vietnam War into Laos and Cambodia. The protests at Kent State followed that announcement, and we'll talk with Joe about that day and what it means.
That's Wednesday, April 30th from 11 a.m. until noon.
Now, unfortunately, while we deeply sympathize with the plight of 7 million Cambodians whose country has been invaded,
this KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
Out loud.
Welcome to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show on KBOO. My name is Carla, and I'll be the host of the show this evening. Tonight, we're going to be welcoming organizers and producers of The Bicast, which is an independently created, volunteer-produced podcast for the bisexual community and their allies. We have here in studio Lynette, who will be telling us about her work with the Bicast. We'll also be hearing from John, who's going to be calling into the studios from Washington, D.C. And we'll be hearing from how the Bicast got started, as well as what's going on with the bisexual community today. So stay tuned for that interview. And later in the show, we'll be featuring This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine. For those that have never heard of This Way Out, I encourage you to look them up online. Their website is thiswayout.org. This Way Out is another volunteer-created production that was really an inspiration for a lot of different queer radio makers today, and also a very important part of our collective rainbow history. Now, we're going to take a short musical break and hear some music from Christine Havrilla. But before we get to this musical break, I want to let you know how to connect with us online. We love to hear from our listeners, and our email address is outloudradio@gmail.com. If you have any feedback on the show, or perhaps you have an idea for something that we should discuss on a future radio show, or perhaps you'd like to get involved and help create Out Loud, feel free to let us know. Again, the email is outloudradio@gmail.com. Now, if you connect on Facebook or Twitter, you can look for KBOO Out Loud on Facebook and Twitter. And again, we love to connect with our listeners and fans via social media. So we hope to see you online. Now, stay tuned for our interview from The Bicast. But first, let's take a short musical break. I'm going to be playing a song from Christine Havrilla, which is a live song of hers, a song titled Hole in the Ground. And we're going to be featuring some more music from Christine Havrilla during the show this evening, because she's going to be performing here in Portland this coming weekend, Sunday, May 4th at 5 p.m. at Mississippi Pizza Pub, which is located on Northeast Mississippi Avenue, just a little bit north of
Fremont. And again, Christine Havrilla's show is this Sunday at 5 p.m. It is a free show, but they are asking for a $5 donation. Here's a little musical sample. Again, Christine Havrilla. The song is titled Hole in the Ground.
To
That song was from Christine Havrilla, titled Hole in the Ground. Live version of that song, Christine Havrilla will be playing here in Portland this Sunday, May 4th at 5 p.m. at the Mississippi Pizza Pub, which is located on Northeast Mississippi Avenue, just a few blocks north of Fremont. You can find more information about Christine Havrilla at her website. She spells Christine, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E. Her last name is H-A-V-R-I-L-L-A.com. She has at least a handful of different albums out, and she's got a huge following. She's out on tour right now. This is a free show on Sunday at 5 p.m., She is asking for a $5 donation at the door, but of course, nobody turned away for lack of funds. We'll be sharing another song from Christine Havrilla later in the show. Next, I'd like to move into our interview for this evening, and I would like to welcome Lynette to the KBOO Studios. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's so nice to have you in the studio and to be talking to a fellow radio maker. Though for folks that aren't familiar, maybe let's start off. So Lynette, and we are going to be having another guest, John, join us in just a moment. They and a team of people create the Bicast, which is a podcast. And maybe for folks that don't know, what is a podcast?
A podcast is basically a radio show on the go. You can subscribe to it in iTunes, and you can take it with you, listen to it off of your phone. You can listen to it on the website at your convenience. And it's basically mostly usually just radio talk show kind of format.
Okay. And so you are one of how many producers or how many creators of the Bicast?
There are 7 of us.
Okay, great. And you're not only, I mean, you're obviously here in Portland, mm-hmm. and John is joining us from Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And where are some of your other producers?
Oh, well, Willow Drevin, they are in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay.
Michael Gullahue is coming to us from Grayson, Kentucky. Simone is in Perth, Australia. Becca Sarna is in England, and Alfia, she hasn't been on the show as a host, so she's not ready for that, but she's like the administrative manager. She lives in New York, but she's originally from India.
Wow, that is such a great mix of people.
And we have coming up soon Eileen Leary. She'll be working strictly as on my Bi-Historian project.
Okay, very exciting. Now, I think John has joined us. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi. And now, Lynette was just sharing, you know, the names of all the different people. I guess your collective of folks.
Yes, we are.
You are all volunteers.
All volunteers.
And what are some of the different roles? I guess, like, how do you contribute? Tell me about your role with the Bicast.
John.
Well, the first thing I did was really get involved with the website and build it up. And when the show started, I jumped right in on air.
And tell us the website so folks can find you guys.
Yes, it's thebicast.org.
Wonderful. Okay. And then, so folks finding you on the website, you have podcasts or I guess I want to say segments mm-hmm. that people can listen to.
Right. We have episodes, which is every month we have kind of a roundtable thing where we have guests on, what we call spotlight activists, and then just regular folks from the community who want to participate. Our last show is centered around Sherry Eisner. She wrote Notes for a Bisexual Revolution. It was discussing labels, their use, and abuse. It usually runs over an hour and a half on those. Then we have individual segments that we have bi-threads where we actually read responses to questions that are answered in some of the groups, and that's pretty interesting. We do promos. We do, John, maybe you can help me.
We did it a few interviews that were segments, some long, some short. We did an interview with the president of the Bisexual Resource Center for Bisexual Health Awareness Month, and it was very informative. And the and Lynette did an interview with the president of Binet USA.
Yes, that was kind of a wrap up for the month of March. We had a lot going on in March, and for the past year, really. But March was Bisexual Health Awareness Month, and that went very well. And if you need information about just about anything, you can hit Bisexual Resource Center on the website or on Facebook, and Binet USA. They can steer you to anything you really need to know. There's a lot that went on last year. There was a meeting in September at the White House with 33 of our activists went there, and several other things that happened. And we have a lot planned for the whole year. So we went over that.
Wonderful. And so let me go back in time a little bit. You mentioned you've had a really busy year. So how long has the Bicast as a podcast existed?
We have actually done three segments, so we've actually been on the air 3 months.
Okay.
I actually started physically building the Bicast on January 17th of this year.
Okay. Well, how exciting. You're new.
Yeah.
Yay.
We started putting it together several months before that. I actually had to learn the technical part of it quite a bit. And John was, of course, a tremendous help. And several of my friends who I'm involved with in the podcast community,
right?
They helped me quite a bit. Bob DeGrand from the DexterCast, IntroCast, Amy Moore and her partner, Sam Miller from the Slayerettes, and also Amy Torrey, they all pitched in and helped me figure out what the heck I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was familiar with podcasting. It was something I really enjoyed. I had been a guest on the show, but the actual technicality of it was something I had to learn fairly quickly. And it was a challenge, but it was great. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Right.
And we're still learning. We have sound issues, partly because of the medium we have to use to actually call people.
Mm-hmm.
We're moving away from that, and we only use that when we have to, and mm-hmm. we're moving to something a little more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on getting better equipment for me in particular. Several of us have actually purchased their own mics on their own, mm-hmm. out of their own pocket. I have not done that yet, mm-hmm. and that's my next goal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, I would say that one of our biggest problems is money, and we're starting to get money in. But go to our website. If you like what you hear, we'd love a donation.
Okay, and tell our folks, I'm going to have you say that website a couple more times. Is it just thebicast.com?
Yes, www.
www.thebicast.org.
Okay.
Yes.
And so folks can find you there. And you guys also network on Facebook?
Quite a bit, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a Facebook page, and we also have a Facebook group. It is actually set at secret because there are people in our community that really cannot be outed. Mm-hmm. And that's to protect them.
Okay.
But if you do want to join that, you actually have to become friends with one of the admins, which are all of us,
mm-hmm.
Before you can do that. All you have to do is put in a simple request, and we can figure that out with you.
Okay.
It is just a form of protection for them. We have other avenues for you to reach us. We have the website, which you can comment on and, of course, download everything on. We always post into the Facebook groups, Tumblr, and Twitter all of our episodes, and you can find them there, too. Please mm-hmm. share if you like,
mm-hmm.
or we'd love that. And there are ways to find us without actually being in the secret group.
Okay. And thank you for saying, I guess I do want to acknowledge for a lot of people in the privacy. And here in Portland, I feel very fortunate that for most, I'm going to say most, not all, but for many people here in Portland, being out is a safe thing. But the reality for many people, even in the city, but definitely outside of the safe bubble that is Portland metro area, we have many, many, many of our friends and chosen family in the rainbow world that have to be in the closet, not
yes.
just for their job, but for their personal safety.
For their personal safety.
Yeah.
And this is a real issue. And
mm-hmm.
and we have to be very mindful all the time that there are people that we could put them in danger if we mm-hmm. out them by accident.
Right.
So we're very cautious about what we do.
Right. Well, and I can appreciate that safety factor. I mean, just working in media myself. But mm-hmm. I know the prejudice against the bisexual community is real. And unfortunately, sometimes it's violent,
mm-hmm.
and it makes me really uncomfortable to acknowledge, hopefully not the violence, but there is certainly some prejudice and some discrimination within our own lesbian and gay, bisexual, transgender, queer community. Sometimes it's our own rainbow friends and family that are that are prejudiced against bisexual people. So rub my heart, and I'm sorry to admit that, but it's true. And that's why I think the work that the BiCast is doing is really, really important. Hopefully your podcast will become more and more popular. And just in case anybody has recently joined the conversation, you're listening to Out Loud. This is the Queer Culture Show on KBOO. My name is Carla, and we are speaking with Lynette here in studio and John on the phone. And they are both producers, hosts, promoters, recruiters for The BiCast, which is a podcast for the bisexual community and their allies. Now, we are unfortunately starting to run out of time. I guess I do want to just leave an open invitation for you two or anyone from The BiCast to come back and update us and what's the latest. And I know there's so much more we could talk about the bisexual community. But for now, I guess, Lynette, I'll ask you first. Are there And then, John, certainly you'll have your turn as well. But any closing thoughts you want to leave with our listeners or things you wanted to be sure to share tonight?
Yes, I just wanted to say why we started doing this.
Absolutely.
We are all just regular folks, most of us pretty poor, and some of us are very disabled. But we wanted to do something to promote our image and what we are about as a bisexual community to everyone else, to get them to know, to make something positive of this, and also to give support to all of those who have to stay in the closet or are newly coming out and feel alone and, just like I did, lost. We just want them to know we're here, we care, you're not wrong, you're not broken, you're a human being.
Mm-hmm. And your people are out there.
We're here for you.
Yeah, you can find your people, thebicast.org.
Okay? That is correct.
Right. So, John, I apologize. We have to say our goodbyes, but any closing thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Come in here and see what we're doing. And like I said, if you like us, make a donation. We also have an extensive library of bisexual books, and a few pennies come to us when you order from Amazon.
Or when you click on a little link, you get pennies for that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and folks can find out how to support you guys financially or sharing your work through your website, right?
Through the website.
Okay.
Right.
And John, thank you so much for joining us over the phone this evening. I appreciate all your work out there in D.C. and on the internet. So,
yeah.
And both you and Lynette, please come back and join us here in the KBOO studios again sometime soon, okay?
Certainly will.
Right on.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And listeners, again, the website is thebicast.org. You can find their podcasts there, as well as how to support them and their library and all sorts of other things. So, again, thanks to John and Lynette for being our guests tonight on Out Loud. We're going to take a very short musical break, hear one more song from Christine Havrilla before we say our goodbyes to you this evening. Thank you for tuning in. The song we're about to hear is another live song from Christine Havrilla. And again, her performance here in Portland, her next show is on Sunday, May 4th at 5 p.m. at the Mississippi Pizza Pub. This song is titled Daffodil.
Thank you for singing.
My apologies that we need to shorten this song, but we are starting to run out of time. We're listening to Christine Havrilla. This is a live song titled Daffodil. She's performing here in Portland this Sunday, May 4th at 5 p.m. at the Mississippi Pizza Pub, located very close to Mississippi Avenue and Fremont. Want to let you know a community announcement. This Saturday at 8 p.m. is the first concert of the Portland GSA Youth Choir. It's a Portland cabaret happening at the Waverly Heights UCC, located at 3300 Southeast Woodward Street in Portland. Tickets are $10 for adults and free for youth 22 and under. So again, the Portland Gay Straight Alliance Youth Choir is performing this Saturday, May 3rd at 8 p.m. at the Waverly Heights UCC, located on 33rd and Southeast Woodward Street. Also, just want to let you know how to find us online. You can connect with Out Loud on Facebook. Do a search for KBOO Out Loud. And our email is outloudradio@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to go to This Way Out.
People think that gays shouldn't be allowed to play sports, or they're too soft. From the looks of it, I know Michael Sam isn't soft, and Jason Collins isn't, and for one, I'm not soft.
As queer people, we've been rubbed out of history, and I wanted to create a way to share our public commemorative markers. And I'm always surprised for myself how emotional it is to actually do the rubbing.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Saudi cops bust 35 gay partygoers to promote virtue. Coming out is a slam dunk for a top-tier U.S. college basketball player. And the gay rub collects impressions of history. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Allen.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 12, 2014. Saudi Arabian media reported the arrest this week of 35 men for being at a gay party at a beach resort in the seacoast city of Jeddah. The men were detained by the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention, the kingdom's religious police. Some 4,000 officers patrol the streets of Saudi Arabia day and night to enforce strict Islamic law, including dress codes and the separation of the genders. Law enforcement authorities claim that the men at the gay party were all wearing dresses, although a complaint from neighbors about loud music is what drew the initial police attention. Consensual adult same-gender sex is punished in Saudi Arabia with flogging, chemical castration, imprisonment, or even death. Trans men and women suffer the same fate. Not all arrests by the religious police necessarily lead to prosecution in Saudi Arabia, but detainees are identified in the files as gay, which can lead to lifelong financial and sometimes sexual extortion. If word gets out, they can also be fired from their jobs and even targeted for death by members of their own families who fear being shamed. There have been no further details about where the 35 gay partygoers are now or the specific charges they face.
Four men were sent to prison in Egypt this week after being convicted of having had gay sex. There are no specific laws against same-gender sex in the country, but gay men are usually charged with debauchery. The four men were apparently arrested in a private apartment in March. One was sentenced to a three-year prison term at hard labor, while the other three face 4 years behind bars. Men in Egypt suspected of being gay are often sent to pathologists for so-called forensic testing. Such anal probes are common in the Middle East and North Africa to confirm homosexuality. But such procedures have been described by international human rights groups as torture and have no basis in science. It's not known if the four men sent to prison this week suffered such abuse. Anti-gay arrests have increased in the past few years as Egypt lurches from one political crisis to another. Police detained a man in August 2012 for leading a gay sex network, and later that year, vigilantes beat four young men for allegedly having sex in a car. The vigilantes were not charged, but the four young men were arrested. A highly publicized raid in Cairo last October netted more than a dozen men. International LGBT rights activist Scott Long wrote about the escalating anti-gay police actions in Egypt in a recent blog post, noting that it never hurts to announce that you've picked up a few suspected homosexuals. What better paints you, corrupt and immoral though you may be, as a defender of the nation's morals?
In better news for sexual minorities this week, an Italian court ordered the Tuscan city of Grosseto to recognize the marriage of a gay couple who legally wed in New York in 2012. Stefano Bucci and Giuseppe Cicchiotti took the municipality to court after officials refused to register their marriage. The court found that Italian jurisdictions must recognize any marriage that was legally conducted abroad because there is no reference to the genders of who can marry in the country's civil code. It's the first time that the legal marriage of a same-gender couple has been recognized in Italy. The couple said they went to court because they had no faith that Italian politicians, dominated by the Roman Catholic Church, would enact marriage equality legislation anytime soon. Reuters reported that Grosseto officials are planning to appeal the ruling.
A U.S. federal judge has ordered the state of Indiana to recognize the marriage of a lesbian couple legally wed in Massachusetts last year. One of the women, Nikki Quasney, has terminal ovarian cancer. She and her partner of 13 years, Amy Sandler, live in Munster, Indiana, and have two young daughters. The couple wanted their out-of-state marriage to be recognized in Indiana to ensure that Sandler can access the state and federal benefits available to surviving spouses and children. Sandler and Quasney are part of a bigger lawsuit challenging the state's ban on marriage equality. The LGBT advocacy group Lambda Legal asked the U.S. District Court in the Southern District of Indiana to hear their case on an emergency basis because of Quasney's deteriorating health. Judge Richard Young's order is good for 28 days, subject to review after that.
A three-judge panel of the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals heard Utah's challenge this week to a district court ruling that declared the state's ban on marriage equality to be unconstitutional. Most observers who attended the hearing said two of the three judges are leaning toward upholding the lower court decision, but a ruling is not expected for several months. The losing party can appeal to the full 10th Circuit or directly to the Supreme Court. U.S. District Court Judge Robert J. Shelby ruled in December that Utah's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples is unconstitutional. Eight other federal district court judges have come to the same conclusion since then, virtually all citing last June's Supreme Court Windsor decision that struck down provisions of the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. That law prevented the federal government from recognizing legally married same-gender couples. A challenge to a district court ruling that struck down Oklahoma's state law defining civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual is scheduled to be heard by the same 10th Circuit three-judge panel in the coming week.
The Attorney General of the state of Virginia this week asked the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to uphold a lower court ruling declaring his state's ban on civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples to be unconstitutional. Mark Herring said in papers filed this week that same-gender couples have the same right to marry as interracial heterosexual couples. Virginia statutes once banned such marriages until those laws were overturned by the Supreme Court's 1967 Loving decision. U.S. District Judge Arenda Wright Allen struck down Virginia's ban on civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples in February. A three-judge panel of the 4th Circuit is scheduled to hear oral arguments in the case on May 17th. There are only 5 U.S. states without court challenges to laws banning civil marriage for same-gender couples: Alaska, Georgia, Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Lambda Legal's John Davidson told gay journalist Rex Walkner that there currently are 64 pending marriage equality lawsuits in the U.S., 43 in federal court, 9 of which are on appeal, and 21 in state courts, 5 of which are on appeal. Virtually everyone agrees that the U.S. Supreme Court will eventually be asked to issue a definitive ruling on the matter.
New LGBT-inclusive legislation to curb bullying in public schools was signed into law this week by Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton. 19 characteristics are listed, including sexual orientation, gender identity, disability, physical appearance, and economic class. The new legislation replaces a previous measure that required school districts in the state to have an anti-bullying policy, but lacked specifics or any enforcement provisions. It also required teachers and staff to be neutral when dealing with anti-LGBT-based harassment or bullying. The new Safe and Supportive Minnesota Schools Act, which comes into force later this year, requires school districts to train staff on how to recognize and react to bullying. Prevention programs to change behavior are favored over punishment. According to the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, or GLSEN, Minnesota has become the 16th U.S. state, along with Washington, D.C., to enact LGBT-inclusive anti-bullying laws.
And finally, the mayor and the City Council of Seattle, Washington, have expressed their support for a Boy Scout troop leader who was fired last month because he's gay. The regional body of the youth organization revoked the membership of Eagle Scout Jeff McGrath after officials learned about his sexual orientation when his troop was profiled on a network TV news program. In a letter to the organization's regional body, Seattle Mayor Ed Murray and City Council members called the dismissal deeply disturbing and said that it undermines the credibility of the Boy Scouts of America as a teacher of admirable values. The BSA began accepting openly gay youth for the first time this year, but continues to exclude anyone who's 18 or older and openly gay from adult leadership positions. McGrath is married to his longtime partner, and parents of the scouts in his troop know about his sexual orientation and don't care. He's been leading Seattle Troop 98 since its formation last year. McGrath has refused to step down. According to local media, only a troop's sponsoring organization, in this case the Rainier Beach United Methodist Church, can officially remove him from duty. Reverend Dr. Monica Corsaro, the church's leader, has made it clear that that won't happen. "It's very disappointing that a policy that is so blatantly discriminatory is being acted out," she said. "Jeffrey is our scoutmaster, and Jeffrey will remain our scoutmaster." A spokesperson for the BSA regional body in Seattle referred reporters asking about the conflict to the national office in Irving, Texas, which is yet to weigh in on the issue.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 12, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Michael Allen.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio news magazine produced by, about, and for our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
With a black crayon and some polyester batting fabric, you can help maintain history by rubbing it in. Find out how later in the program. Derek Gordon won't have to hide anymore, and that's a first for U.S. National Collegiate Athletic Association Division I basketball player. The University of Massachusetts sophomore publicly came out as gay in an interview this week with ESPN's Kate Fagan.
"You just told your teammates. Can you take us through what happened in that locker room, how you told them?"
"Well, my coach started it off first. He said we should start it off funny. So he said, I just wanted to let y'all know that I'm gay. And everybody looked at my coach surprised. Soon as I said it, everybody wasn't surprised at all. So they was more like, about time you admit it. We've been beating your back in about it. And they was all just, it was all just like, all right, we're gonna support you no matter what. We're gonna be there for you. And this doesn't change anything. And that's what I want. I don't want them to feel that they have to act a different way around me or be a different way."
"When did you first know that you are gay?"
In middle school, I thought I was just going through a phase, honestly, until high school came and my first year of college, and that's when I kind of figured I was starting to fight it a little bit, and I just thought, why fight it? Why not just go with it? Maybe this is who you really are. And at the end of the day, I want to be myself, and I don't want to hide and be somebody that I'm not.
What was it like hiding on a team? Like, what kinds of things were you saying and doing?
I used to lie to him, said I had a girlfriend, and man, I can't wait to go home and see my girlfriend and stuff like that, just to like keep them second guessing. Every time we travel after a team practice or dinner, whatever we doing, people always used to notice that I used to sit by myself. They never wonder why though or anything. They just like, why is he by himself? But it's because I'm hiding. I don't want to do anything or put myself in this situation that y'all could find out.
How did you feel when Jason Collins came out to Sports Illustrated last year?
When he came out, I wanted to come out the next day. it was just, it was a relief, like about time, like finally it happened. But I still couldn't jump the gun because he wasn't in the NBA at the time when he came out. But when he went back, that's when I started to build a little more confidence. I watched he was getting subbed into a game, and everybody stood up and started clapping. And I was visualizing myself as that being me, but for college. And I just kept replaying it over and over and over again. But since when they're saying Jason Collins, I was saying Derek Gordon. And it definitely put a huge smile on my face. I'm not saying that. He's a great guy. I got a chance to talk to him and said that he's very proud of me. He said that he didn't expect nobody from Division I to be coming out this early. So he was just really giving me advice and just letting me know that if I ever need anything or need to talk to him about anything, that he's always going to be there for me. He gave me the confidence and the boost that I needed to put me over the top to coming out.
What, if any, concerns do you still have about being a college player, going into opposing arenas, and honestly, having put this out here?
Right now, there's no concerns, honestly. I'm in a state of mind where no word or anything can hurt me right now. I'm just so happy and just excited to finally put this out there, and happy about my sexuality, and just know that nothing is going to change as far as the basketball aspect. Yeah, there's going to be people out there that's going to say this and say that, but it's not going to affect me. I know who I am, and I'm happy who I am. Hopefully, I finally see a gay flag in the stands, which I ain't never seen before, so it's going to be interesting.
Knowing you had this secret, how has that affected your game up until this point?
I struggled a lot at the beginning of the season, and I'm not sure what it was. But after every game, I always had that thought in my mind, like I'm hiding. It was at times I cried because it was just, I was looking for answers and I wasn't getting them. And honestly, the way I feel now is honestly indescribable. I just feel like a bunch of weight has just been lifted off my shoulders and I can fly, but not literally.
What is it that makes it so hard to be dealing with processing your sexuality and playing a Division I sport?
People think that gays shouldn't be allowed to play sports, or they're too soft, or this and that. From the looks of it, I know Michael Sam isn't soft and Jason Collins isn't, so, and for one, I'm not soft, and I think people misinterpret that when it comes to being gay. It doesn't have nothing to do with how you perform on the court. And that's what I try to do. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm still going to play the same. I'm still going to be the beast guy that I am, but my sexuality is just different.
That was University of Massachusetts basketball player Derek Gordon in an interview with ESPN's Kate Fagan. As is often the case, he also said family members had different initial reactions, but that they all now fully support him. Two U.S. sports legends reacted to the news while on a panel at this week's LBJ Civil Rights Summit at the Lyndon Baines Johnson Presidential Library in Austin, Texas. National Basketball Association Hall of Famer and pro basketball's first African-American coach, Bill Russell, said of the negative responses to LGBT athletes,
"It seems to me, it may not be a good correlation, but a lot of questions they asked about gay athletes were essentially the same questions they used to ask about us, the black athletes."
Absolutely.
You know.
And National Football League great, actor, activist, and domestic violence convict Jim Brown added his perspective.
You know, I can't get into the religious aspect of it or to the sexual aspect of it. It's that I look for the, as you said earlier, the character of a person. And that's good enough for me, because I have my own things I got to deal with.
I
don't have an answer to everything.
Bill Russell and Jim Brown on Being Out in Sports.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org.
No matter where you are in the world, you can participate in a hands-on LGBT history project. Our Steve Fried has the how-to details.
I'm Stephen Rains, a poet living in Los Angeles. I moved to Los Angeles about 8 years ago. I've published 2 collections of poetry. I've edited an anthology, and I have a handful of chapbooks. I also teach writing workshops, and I like to combine activism, education, and art, as well as connect people with information. That's what I try to do with any piece of writing, and it's also what I've done with this project, The Gay Rub.
Well, what is a rub? And does it cost extra?
Depends on who you go to. But in this instance, The Gay Rub is a collection of rubbings from GLBTQ landmarks across the globe. And as a poet, as someone who's in touch with language, you know, it couldn't just be a bland title. So I came up with the title The Gay Rub. And it was because of all of the connotations of the word rub. Rub is could be sexual slang, as in to rub one out. Rub could also mean social friction when people talk. You know, someone would say like, oh, they got a lot of rub for that. It could also mean rubbing, which in this case it does. I also think that as queer people, we've been rubbed out of history. And I wanted to create a way to share our public commemorative markers, to gather them all together and display them at one time. And by doing so, I think it's a way of showing what people and what landmarks get attention and recognition, and what people get omitted, what kind of people get omitted as well.
Well, what was the genesis of this?
I came up with the idea about 4 years ago and started collecting right away the rubbings. I live in West Hollywood, and about a mile away from my house at Crescent Heights and Santa Monica Boulevard, there's a plaque dedicated to honoring trans people who have been victims of violence. And I was told that it was the first plaque in the country. And I felt really fortunate to live in West Hollywood and have this so close. Public markers bring about a feeling of legitimizing our experience and honoring it. And I thought how great it must be for people to walk by that every day and see it and read it, and how powerful it is that the city was sponsoring this and they thought it was valuable. And I started to wonder how many markers are out there talking about or dedicated to the queer experience. And then I started to incorporate gravestones as well, because I think it also is an interesting way of how our history has been documented and how people choose to document themselves, how people are recognized posthumously, you know, in grave markers.
We talk about the participatory nature of this, because I love the fact that it's just not one sad man going around with a pen and some, you know, charcoal or whatever. But you've made this kind of a huge project.
The scope of the project is worldwide, and I like the idea of including people. And it wasn't just about me and what I thought was important, but I wanted everyone's input to see, like, what markers they knew of. We walk past these things that become a part of our everyday scenery, and we don't really take note. And just if we would pause just for a moment and just actually read what's written on the plaque, I think that it's incredibly moving. And I'm always surprised for myself how emotional it is to actually do the rubbing. To rub a landmark, to rub someone's gravestone is such a loving act. You know, most all of these are outside, and so that they endure climate conditions. And I remember Sylvester's was really important to me. Sylvester, the disco star, Sylvester James. And when I went to his grave, it was overgrown and there was like a tree branch on it. And every time I do a rubbing, I clear it off. And so everyone who's participated in the gay rub, when they leave, you know, a marker, it's left in better condition than when they were found.
What kind of feedback do you get from the participants?
Everyone has a story, actually. Like, everyone has a really entertaining story. And there is a sense of adventure to this. The people are going to landmarks or locations they haven't been to before. A lot of people have gone when they're traveling, that they've taken rubbing supplies with them. And so it's a different way to experience a city. In the past 4 years, I've spent more time in cemeteries than I have, you know, totaling my whole life. And I was able to witness how people mourn. And that was really interesting, just to spend some time in cemeteries. It was also interesting to see the choices of how family members chose to honor the deceased. And I'm concerned about gay erasure that happens when people die. One person who is part of the rubbing is Alvin Ailey. And Alvin asked his doctor when he died if his AIDS diagnosis would not be disclosed. And it was a way for his mother to not feel shame.
We've lost so many people to AIDS.
The loss is devastating. When people talk about the enormous impact of AIDS in our community for gay men, it's very apparent when looking at some of these markers and how many talented people we've lost from AIDS.
What about the people who are still closeted or hadn't self-identified when they died?
One of the challenges is, by being included in the gay rub, you know, how does one ensure that the person whose marker or headstone that I've rubbed, that they were actually gay? I want to be as accurate as possible, yet due to gay erasure, due to homophobia and how our history has not been adequately documented, it is challenging sometimes what one's lifestyle actually was.
Give me the rub on the rub. How's it actually done?
Through this project, I feel as if I've really become a rubbing expert. And the only time I had done a rub before was at sixth grade summer camp. And I'm not even so sure I connected with it deeply. But since then, you know, I've done so many rubbings that I've become really quite skilled at it. And the process itself is really quite easy. The product that I recommend people use is just a black crayon, because charcoal smudges, and crayon's super easy to use. It's really easy to find a black crayon. It's very accessible. I've mailed a lot of supplies out to people so they can mail them back. I'm still receiving rubbings. I'm still collecting them, and I would like it to keep going.
This has been a conversation with Stephen Raines. Find more information about The Gay Rub online at
thegayrub.com. Also on my website, stephenraines.com. That's Stephen with a V, Raines, R-E-I-G-N-S.
This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Michael Allen, Carol Myers, Armistead Maupin, Lucia Chappelle, and Steve Pride contributed program material. You heard excerpts from the UMass fight song and additional music from the Tales of the City TV miniseries and by Sweet Honey in the Rock. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Yavanna Foundation, a generous bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and by our listener supporters. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to meet the crew, see what's coming up, check out special offers, and find links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Alicia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2YOU Tamworth, New South Wales, WDRT Viroqua, Wisconsin, KGHI Westport, Washington, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:01. Stay tuned for our special candidate discussion with Don Merrill coming up after these messages.
Do you see it? It's all around us. It's an assault on our rights, our freedoms, our food, our jobs, our children's education, and ultimately an assault on the only life support system we have.